Over the last few years, we've been up in the Northeast. I've seen Walden Pond, where Henry David Thoreau did his thinking and his writing. And I understand that there are certain places that just within themselves are powerful, can be powerful, can cause you to have maybe some deeper thoughts, where you can really retreat away from the world and think about life. Sometimes we call the books of Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and the letter to Philemon the prison epistles. But I might rather call them contemplations from a jail cell, because Paul was in prison. And he was thinking about what his life was really all about. And there were things that he wanted to remind Christians. Recently, I was blessed with the opportunity, and I say it's an opportunity, to be out of town on different occasions for different reasons. Of course, experiencing the death in my family. And anytime you have a death in the family, it causes you to think and reflect, especially if that person is older than you are and you have a lot of memories from your childhood and your formative years because of that person. And then this past week, I was up in Detroit, and I got to see a church in another place, in a different culture, a different circumstance. And when you have a few opportunities like that close together, it gives you opportunity to think about your life. Yesterday, I was in the backyard. It was a beautiful day yesterday, just like today. And I was looking at the swing set. Our swing set is getting rusty. There was a time in which we purchased that swing set when we lived in Lawrenceburg, and yes, it made the move over here, and I remember some of you guys that helped put it in the backyard, and I still appreciate that day we moved to the house. Remember that? And we set that thing together, and since that time it's been painted so that the wood hasn't gotten too rotten from the weather. But I was thinking about how rarely do I see any child on that swing set. In fact, usually it's maybe someone who may be visiting for a few minutes that goes over to it. My children are growing up. They don't need a swing set so much anymore. So I think a lot about how life transitions and the things that need to be done. I know that I don't belong here. And I don't mean Tennessee, I mean Earth. I don't belong here on Earth. That's not what God made me for. And I know that sometimes I get bogged down just carrying out responsibilities in the physical world. I believe that life is a great blessing, and we are full of blessings everywhere. But often I just long to go home and be with the Lord. So what am I supposed to really be doing? What if I want to please God and glorify Him on earth? And what if I want to be in heaven someday? See, it's difficult sometimes to slow down long enough to take an assessment about your life. It's that time of year where you have the opportunity to go on vacation or just get out of town. And I think that's good. Or maybe you need some type of major event to take place in your life so that you can stop what you're doing long enough to take a good hard look at yourself as an individual. We look at Saul's life and we understood that on the road to Damascus he saw that light. And that changed his life. And then it was moments like being in prison that reminded him about life and what it was all about. So this morning, I want to look into the book of Philippians with you, chapter 3. I read this chapter over and over this week because I realized that as Paul was having his contemplations from a jail cell, he was considering what he really needed to do and what he needed to tell the church. We might say a jail cell, but more likely in Acts chapter 28, he was in house arrest. And the prison epistles fit well with the end of the book of Acts, where Paul had a couple of years there on house arrest to meet people and to study with people and to be evangelistic and also write letters to the churches. I want to think about at least three things here in this passage that we all need to do so that one day heaven can be our home. And I'm not going to read the 21 verses, but I want you to be reading the passages while I'm thinking about them with you. The first thing that we need to do if we want to go to heaven someday is we need to have no more confidence in the flesh. One thing I did as I read this is I tried to summarize for myself what Paul was trying to say. And so here's my summary from verses 1 through 9. There's some things I need to keep saying to you for your benefit. And one is that you need to be careful about the people who insist that you must be circumcised in order to belong to God. Don't put your confidence in physical things. If anyone has ever been qualified to do so, it's me. I am an Israelite, a pure-blooded Jew. If you want to count for high religious standards, I was a Pharisee. You want enthusiasm? I persecuted the church. You want winning God's approval by obeying the law of Moses? I kept it in the strictest sense. But I threw all of that away, my heritage, my religion, my status, my wealth and honor, so that I might gain Christ, because I want to know Him and His resurrection, and not have faith that comes from the law, but spiritual inward faith in Christ. My righteousness is no longer found in the performance of the law of Moses, but instead it is in faith, my faith in the righteousness of Christ. Main point here in these first 9 verses is that we have no confidence in the flesh. This means if we're going to gauge success, we cannot do so by looking on what's going on in our physical lives. We can stop at the end of this school year and we could think about how the summer is coming on, and we look at our homes, we're probably pretty pleased with them. We've just gone through watching some of our kids graduate or get through another school year. We think about the things that we want to do throughout the summer, maybe improvements that we want to make on our property, places that we want to go. We look at our jobs. We assess all of these things and we see that we're blessed. And from the appearances and what everybody else sees about us, we could probably be pretty pleased. But my question is that all we are? Is that what defines us? The physical things in this temporal place that we're in. See, Saul, who became Paul, was a perfect example of a man who had it all and who had nothing at all at the same time. So, his religion was bad. He was zealous about it, but it was still not up to par. It was not according to the full revelation of Jesus Christ. So what about your religion? Define it. What is it? In Romans chapter 12, Paul said, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Some versions say your reasonable service of worship. But what is your reasonable service? What's reasonable to you? What are the spiritual sacrifices that you offer up to God every day? What's your ministry? What difference are you making in the world? And if you died, would the cause of Christ suffer? Paul said that he wanted to gain Christ. He said that in order to do that, the things that were gained to him, he had to count those things as loss. He calls them here rubbish, something to be thrown away. And yet we look at Paul's life and we see that it was full of blessings. I'm of the mind most of the time not to throw away my blessings. But what's interesting is that Paul had to take some things out of his life in order to make room for Christ, even blessings, physical blessings. If we are honest, we would say that we are thankful for the things that we have and we enjoy them. And we look for more good things to enjoy. That's how we do life. But in the midst of all of these physical blessings, it leaves us with very little room for God. We have tons of room for the things that we want to do, things that make us happy for today or for the next 5 minutes. But we rarely suffer the loss of anything, and we rarely throw anything away if we see it as meaningful. I want to make you a challenge for this summer. Throw some things away. To count some things lost for Christ. Here are a few suggestions. How about taking a technology break for a while? Could you do that? Could you take your cell phone and turn it off for a little while? I know some people that would literally panic. They would go into a panic. Could you get off of social media for a while? Maybe you should pick a few books of the Bible to read this summer. Try to read them daily. Have a family devotional in your home. Take your kids or your family to a meeting some weeknight or to a vacation Bible school. Do something spiritual with them. And the only way you can do that is if you did that intentionally. We do everything else on purpose. We go to all the other things, all of the recreational things, all the athletic events, all the entertainment. But I'm going to suggest that maybe in order to gain Christ, to have a full knowledge of what He has done for you, you might want to count some of those things as something to be tossed aside for a little while. Paul, in essence, really gave his entire life up. He gave up his status. He gave up his place in the social ladder. He gave up his wealth, came from a wealthy family. We see most of the rest of his life, he was a bit of a vagabond, wandering around, often persecuted, often shipwrecked, stoned, thrown in prison. And he did all these things because of what Christ had done for him. And that's what he meant when he talked about sharing in the sufferings of Christ. So the second thing that we need to do, besides having less confidence in physical things, is we need to start conforming to the death of Jesus. And that's what he says here in verses 10 through 16. Let me give you another summary. I want to know Christ in every way possible, from understanding his righteousness that saved me to his resurrection and even what he suffered. I want to be raised as Christ was raised. And I realize that even though I've become a Christian, I have not arrived and I'm not mature or complete. I want to put all of my effort back in the very reason Christ won my heart in the first place. So instead of thinking I've gained anything, I'm going to forget everything that's happened so far. And I'm going to focus on the main goal, and that's getting to heaven. That's the only way to think maturely, and every Christian should have this same thought in mind. So let's keep working together to do the same things and think the same things as members of the church and focused on Christ and on heaven. Those are verses 10 through 16, my summary. What does it mean to know or to share in the fellowships or the fellowship of his sufferings? Look what he says there in chapter 3 and verse 10. That I may know him in the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being conformed to his death. I read this over and over again, trying to get into my mind how this would translate to the 21st century. Because my realization is this: I don't think we can do what Paul is saying he wants to do in exactly the same way Paul did it. Because we're living in a different time, in a different place. We suffer no persecutions like Paul did. And he literally could say, I bear in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus Christ. So how is it that we can be conforming to his death? How can we be involved in the fellowship of his sufferings? I would suggest that one thing that we have to do is be willing to suffer persecution for what we believe to be true. One thing that is definitely happening in our world is the Christian system and the true teachings of the Bible are less appreciated and less supported. Whether you look at it from the government standpoint, from the laws that are being passed down, to the things that Supreme Court says and how they interpret law, to just your common person on the street and what they think is moral or immoral. I would say they probably think hardly anything is immoral. But it's a different world that we live in. If we're Christians, we're simply standing out more than we might have 50 years ago if we hold true to the things that we believe. And so we should not look to please everyone over pleasing God. And we need to do the things that are unpopular sometimes. I think also we need to have a sense of urgency about eternity. And we should care enough about people that we would risk our friendships that lend to cordial and comfortable social relationships and be somewhat confrontational about what we believe to be right in the sight of God. Here's what I think the church needs. The church needs to study the Bible. And then as we study the Bible and we, by faith, practice those things we know to be true, we need to be more separate. We need to be more distinct. We really need to be that light and that salt in the earth. That's the only way that we truly will make a difference. But that's the hard part. That's the suffering. That's the conformity to the death of Jesus. We're probably not going to be persecuted like Paul was. But in a social sense, we probably don't need to fit in so well. Now, do we believe that we have already attained or we have already arrived spiritually and eternally? I want to ask you that question. Look what he says here, verses 12 and 13, that he hasn't already attained, and that means to obtain the prize. He's not already perfected. That means he's not mature or complete. And then in verse 13, I don't count myself to have apprehended. So Paul is saying that I'm not where I want to be in my relationship with Christ. Not yet. And I found that quite incredible, seeing as how we would look to Paul and say that he was probably the champion of Christianity. And yet he says, no, I'm not there yet. And I'm not in heaven yet, so I haven't obtained that ultimate goal. And so that's what I want to be thinking about. But I want us individually to ask ourselves this question this morning. Are we happy with where we are spiritually? I think we have to be careful if we are at the point in our lives where we think this is all we're ever going to be. Look at the very last verse of this chapter. Here's what I think Paul is saying. He's saying that Christ has the ability to transform us to be more like Him. He's saying that He has the ability to do so as we make that transition from earth to heaven. See, we're going to be different. We're going to be given a different kind of body. And the whole eternal existence is going to be different. And I don't know how that is going to be. I just trust that God has that in His control. And He's able to do that. He's able to take us from this place and help us to move on to the next. But I think what he's saying here also in that verse, chapter 3 and verse 21, who will transform our lowly body that it may be conformed to His glorious body, is that Christ can help us to do that today. He can transform us today. That there's room for growth in Christianity, and if we would just let Him, He can take us to that spiritual plane, that higher ground. Now here's the key to progress, Paul says, is forgetting the past and pressing forward to the goal that lies ahead. The word here, forget, is very interesting. In the original language, it means to stop caring, not to care anymore. Now sometimes anxiety is defined as being troubled with cares or full of cares, you know, where you're just torn up about everything all of the time. That's anxiety. So what he's saying about forgetting is, let the past go. Don't care about it anymore. You can't do anything about it anymore. You know, there are a lot of people that are not really ready to walk with Christ because they have so much guilt about the things that they've done. Let it go, Paul said. And there are other people that are Christians but are simply living in the past, looking back at the things that they've done for the Lord, and simply said, that's been enough. Well, it's not. You can't retire from being a child of God. So we have to think about forgetting everything that has happened to this moment and moving on and pressing toward the goal that lies ahead. Now that word pressing forward means to stretch out. It means literally to lengthen your stride. And here's the idea. It means that you want to finish. You're tired and you want to finish. And so you find inside of yourself more than you thought you had, and you see the finish line, and you speed up. So Paul realized that he still had more to do, and so he focused himself on what he was trying to get done. I read a story about Luciano Pavarotti, the famous tenor. And when he was a boy, just at 7 or 8, he began to be taught by another world-renowned tenor. They found his talent, and they were going to develop him. And as he was spending time with this mentor, He said to his dad, he said, you know, I'm not sure what I want to do with my life. I know I want to sing, but I'm not sure if I want to teach or, you know, to be a mentor like this man is, or if I want to become a professional singer. And this is what his dad said. If you sit in the middle of two chairs, you're going to fall on the ground. He said, sit in one chair, son. Decide what it is that you want to do and do that thing. And so Pavarotti decided he wanted to be a professional singer. He decided not to be a teacher. And he put all of his focus on that, and of course probably became the most famous tenor that's ever lived. It's about focusing on the most important thing. And that's what Paul's talking about here. Heaven is the most important thing, and that's the thing that I want to focus on. I was also told that as I was up in Detroit, I was up there in Henry Ford land, but I was told that Henry Ford had all these different things he wanted to do every day. Do you have a list of things that you have to accomplish every day? Pretty long list sometimes. And he wanted to do all these things. He had all these dreams. And he realized that he could probably do all of them a little bit, but probably none of them very well. So it was his regular practice when he would get up in the morning to jog around his house several times. Just to run around the house. And this is what he said. I wanted to use up all of that energy to do for that I was going to have to do all those extra things so that I only had enough time and energy to do one of them. To focus on just that one thing. And I think that was not a bad idea. To at least focus on the one thing that is the most important thing. I've been told that people that are successful, they write down the things that they need to do on that particular day and they write them in order. And they put the most important thing at the very top, the thing that you absolutely must get done today. The other things may not get done, but the one thing that you get done today, you're going to do that. And you go ahead and you tackle that goal first. And then perhaps you can get some of the other things done well, and then that's a bonus. But what if you put that in a spiritual sense? Now, I said that the number one goal is heaven. That's obvious, hopefully, for a Christian. But what if on a daily basis, we decided to do something spiritually as the one thing we were going to do on that particular day? For example, maybe you just want to be kind that day. You've decided that all day long you're going to be kind, regardless of how everybody else is. Or maybe you decide that you're going to help someone today. Maybe you're just going to have a good attitude. Maybe you're going to pray more today. Maybe you're going to decide to encourage someone that you know needs encouraging. Maybe today, just for today, you are going to sacrifice for your family and be thankful that you have people in your life to sacrifice for. Maybe today you're going to look at your blessings and instead of thinking about what you could have, you're going to thank God for what you do have. Or maybe you're just going to look at your role in the world, whether it's at your job or in the church or in your home, and you're going to fulfill that role with joy. What if you did that just for today? Focused on that one thing. I think that helps us to understand what it means to know Christ and to have Him living in our lives. Okay, the third thing, the final thing. We need to consider that our citizenship is in heaven. Here's what Paul says in summary, verses 17 through 21, my summary. There are faithful people in the church who you should use as mentors and examples. They're focused on heaven, but there are many others who are focused on themselves and on worldly things. They hold their opinions as higher than God's, and they're basically just living in the moment. They defend their actions and claim the right to do what they want to do for various reasons they've invented, but they're going to be lost. In the meantime, let's remember that we are not really home here. We're really strangers and pilgrims, and we belong with God in heaven, and we should hardly wait for Jesus to return. And we believe that He is going to come back, and that He's going to change us continually every day if we live to be more like Him. He'll make us better. And we believe that He has the power to even make us completely fit for heaven when that time comes. One of the things that I was thinking about when I had some quiet time was Hebrews chapter 11, verses 13 through 16. I want to read that and then make a point. Talking about the heroes of faith, it says, they all died in faith, Hebrews 11, 13 through 16, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now, they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. If we feel that we belong here on earth, I believe it's impossible to do the will of God. Let me say that again. If we really feel like this is where we belong here on earth, I don't think it's possible for us to do the will of God. Noah, I want you to build an ark. Why, Lord? Why? It hasn't even rained. Abram, I want you to leave the place that you've lived your entire life for a place I'm going to show you. Why, Lord? I like it right here where I am. Noah didn't ask a question. Abram didn't ask a question. We could go on with these other individuals, but the point was, is that they immediately said, yes, Lord, because they realized that it wasn't all about the here and now. It was about that eternal reward. And that's what he says here in Hebrews chapter 11. Even when they talked about going home, they weren't talking about Cookeville, Tennessee, or whatever place you might reside. When they thought about home, they considered that that's heaven. Heaven is home. That's where I want to go. And until I get home, I'm just going to kind of be wandering around here on the earth. So whatever God asks me to do, I'm willing to do that. Whatever it is I have to sacrifice, I'm going to give that up. Because I want more than anything else to go home to be with God in heaven. I would give up this earth in order to obtain that. And I think I've learned over time that's exactly what God is calling us to do. It is plain that when we are focused on temporal things, we make for ourselves gods other than Jehovah. And what he says here in this text that is interesting, it says, there are people who make their own emotions their god. They take pride in the shameful things that they do, and they set their mind on worldly things. These are sometimes even some of our friends who practice things that do not distinguish them from the world and give themselves, with their own excuses, the right to do those things as being not that bad. But we should be different. And our God should be the one up in heaven and not ourselves and not our desires. Christians are supposed to be constantly living in anticipation of the second coming of Christ. And so I think about that as we conclude. When I was a kid, we used to live really close to Disneyland. And I know I talked about this a lot. But I mean, that's a good memory. So it keeps coming back all the time. I mean, 20 minutes from Disneyland, and we would get in the car, we'd be on our way to Disneyland, and I would be waiting. We would come around on the freeway, and when I could see up above the trees and the cars and the traffic, the Matterhorn, I knew we were almost to Disneyland. And so I was out the window looking for the Matterhorn. Why? Because I couldn't wait to be there. I was waiting with anticipation of being in that place that was supposed to be the happiest place on earth, which, as you realize as an adult, is not true. But I want us to think about heaven in that way. That's the way Paul thought about heaven. Have no confidence in fleshly things. Be conformed to the death of Jesus. Remember that your citizenship is in heaven. You don't belong here. If you do those things, if you can be homesick for heaven, then I think that's where the transformation will begin. Perhaps there's someone here this morning who's not a child of God. If you've never obeyed the gospel, the Bible tells us that we are to believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, repent of our sins, confess His name, be immersed in water for the remission of our sins, and He will add us to the church. We can be saved in a saved relationship with God until that salvation comes completely when Jesus comes again. You can be added to His kingdom, and you can have the hope of being there eternally with God. If you're a Christian and you're struggling and you need to get yourself focused again, you need the prayers of the church, or there's something that you need to confess to the church that we might pray for you, we want to help you this morning. If you're subject to the invitation, won't you come as together we stand and as we sing?